Hello and welcome to the Pod of the Damned. I'm your host, Ian. And joining me today is my semi-regular co-host, Anna. How's it going?
Not bad.
Welcome back. It's been a few episodes since you've been on. You were on last Was it Five Nights at Freddy's or Saw 10? Five Nights at Freddy's, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you were on last for Five Nights at Freddy's. We didn't like that movie.
Oh, God, no.
No. But, I don't know. I don't actually know how you feel about this movie. This is your pick. Is this the first time you've picked an actual film to be on and not just I've given you the option of a film?
I think so, yeah.
Because you've been asking to do this movie now for quite a number of months. And we were going to do it a few months ago, and we just sort of never got round to it, and scheduling and all that jazz.
Things happened,
exactly. But we're here now, so... We are the Pod of the Damned. We're a horror podcast that deep dives into a different topic every week in our quest to create a leaderboard of the best and worst horror movies of all time. This is episode number 96, and in today's show we're talking about the 2012 movie The Woman in Black. Before we go any further, if you would like to support this podcast across our social media platforms, you can do so. We're on X at Damned Podcast. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Pod of the Damned. You can email us at podofthedamned@gmail.com, and you can subscribe to us on Patreon, patreon.com/podofthedamned. If you were around earlier on today, we've slightly recorded things out of order today just because of the times that I was able to record with Nico today. So me and Nico broadcast and recorded recorded episode number 97 earlier today, which is the first of our Christmas episodes. If you haven't, if you weren't here for the broadcast, I think it's fair to say that arguing at Christmas is very well and alive during that episode. You were like sitting in the background for it. I think you were just there. Yeah, me and Nico did not agree about a lot of things in that movie. I think it's possibly the most we have ever argued about a movie. And it's not even a horror film. Our whole thing about doing Christmas films this year, like we decided to just do Christmas films and not do horror Christmas films because we wanted to bring a little bit of cheer and just, you know, enjoy some Christmas films. And I think we probably have argued more than that film. Than even going all the way back to our infamous Dr. Sleep versus Child's Play debate, which has at least raged on for about 80 episodes. So look forward to that when that drops next week. But today we're talking about The Woman in Black. So why did you pick this film?
So a few years back when I was still in school, we kind of had to like read a book and kind of analyse it and things like that. So that kind of like stayed in my head, and then later on I kind of watched a movie
It's funny you say that because you said earlier today, you were like, if people haven't seen the film then they'll have read a book because everyone does the book at school. And
well, not everyone, but
no, but that was news to me. I think that's maybe a more modern thing.
I've spoken to a few people around like my age, and they're like, yeah. I had to read it in school. I had to do.
Yeah, so maybe that's a slightly more modern thing. It definitely wasn't a thing when I was at school. There's what, 9 years between me and you, so
yeah.
Maybe that's something that was brought in after I left school. But we certainly never ever read The Woman in Black. I don't remember any of my other classes in my year reading The Woman in Black. So that was definitely news for me. I was a complete obviously I was very very aware of this film. I've only just seen it for the very first time today. Is one of those things, like, I remember when it first came out, and I think when it first came out, I was still stuck in that very much he's Harry Potter mode. Like, this is his very first film that he did after the Harry Potter franchise, and I was very much like, I felt like he was just, like, typecast, and I wasn't going to be able to see it right, I think that was going to ruin the thing for me. And you'll know as well, like, it's been on streaming services, I think, ever since it's been, like, released. It's always showing up on, like, Netflix or Disney or Now TV or Prime or whatever it is you find it on. And it's one of those things I keep saying to myself, like, oh, I'll get round to watching it, and I just kind of never, ever have done. And then you've gone and picked it, so now I've watched it twice, because we watched it at different times. Anyways, we're rambling on. Should we just get into the movie discussion?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're talking all about The Woman in Black. Mm-hmm.
During afternoon tea, there's a shift in the air. A bone-trembling chill that tells you she's there. There are those who believe the whole town is cursed, but the house in the marsh is by far the worst. What she wants is unknown, but she always comes back. The specter of darkness. The woman in black.
This movie was released in 2012, was directed by James Watkins, and stars Daniel Radcliffe, Janet McTeer, and Kieran Hines. The IMDb plot is as follows. A young solicitor travels to a remote village where he discovers that the vengeful ghost of a scorned woman is terrorizing the locals. So you read the book first, or did you watch the film first?
I read the book first.
So having not read the book, obviously you're now, how do you remember much about the book?
Not anymore, no, because I was 15?
Sorry, but like...
15, 16 when I was reading it.
Fair, so you might not like obviously remember like a lot of the aspects of it, but like just off the top of your head, are you aware of there any being any sort of major differences between this and the book?
Hard to tell, but I think it's quite close enough.
You think it's pretty close? Okay. So sometimes
I'm pretty sure I didn't even read the whole thing. It was more like kind of trying to analyse it in school, as you know, like when you have to read something like a book or whatever.
I get it.
Analyse it, so it's a bit different than.
Oh yeah, of course. When I was at school, we definitely did like film study, and we did like book studies and things like that. The films we studied were vastly different than things like this. I think because film study was also a part of our English class. I can't remember if it was a part of your English class as well, but we did a part of our English class, and the film we studied at school was Shrek. So you know, we all had a really good time with that, but like for book studies and that, we did, you know, Shakespeare and various other bits and pieces.
I think my English classes have been very different from your ones, because
well, we can tell
it's either something horror related or I remember one year I had to do a presentation on like psychopaths that like killed people. So yeah, I did a story on that.
Oh well.
A presentation, so
that explains a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about let's just sort of get into some of the aspects of this film. I'm assuming you've chosen this movie because you're a big fan of the movie. You've not chosen this movie because you think this is fucking terrible.
No. Absolutely not. Like, I find it quite interesting, like their acting was good and all that.
Because 2012 you'd have been 12 years old.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you first saw this?
I think about 17.
So you maybe saw it in like 2016, 2017 time. So that's a few years removed from it. So like, I'm assuming at that point as well, maybe that whole thing that I was saying, like the Harry Potter factor had gone a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't such a big issue for you than maybe it was for some people when it was first released. I think that probably hurt this movie when it was first released. Although this movie was a big success. I definitely think that probably held it back, especially in that first sort of couple of years, because people just sort of couldn't get over the fact that for the past decade, essentially, he was Harry Potter on their screens as a child actor. And then here he is playing this sort of really serious period piece, and you know, it's just
that's the thing with like actors, like seeing them kind of grow up.
I think it's
watching them grow up and then they go into like serious roles, and it's like harder for people to accept
I
that.
think especially with child actors. I mean, it's one thing, like, you see it a lot with like comedy actors, especially in like TV shows, like sitcoms and things like that. So that sometimes historically it's possibly been quite difficult for a lot of them to make the jump into film and mainstream film, especially. I think that's becoming slightly less and less though. When you think about who's this, who's you think about people like I'm trying to think of some examples now. I thought about like
I mean,
John Krasinski from The Office, right? From the U.S. Office, who played Jim. You incredibly typecast, but he's gone on to be like A-list celebrity and been in huge amount of serious roles and serious films and things. So like it is starting to happen, I think, a bit more and more. And then if you think about Daniel Radcliffe's career since then, I mean, me and you, we haven't, but this isn't the first Daniel Radcliffe movie we've covered on this show as well. You watched that, you watched Horns with me. You weren't on that episode, but that was not long after this, I don't think either. I think that was only a year or two after this, if I remember correctly. So and I think he's gone on to have a pretty successful career following Harry Potter. When you think about the other ones, like Emma Watson had a brief sort of rise after Harry Potter, but she's not really
I mean, the most
doing.
recent thing she has had was Beauty and the Beast, I think,
Yeah, that was
or something like
how long
that.
ago was that now? I mean,
A
it's
couple
just
of
a
years
couple of years
now.
ago. Rupert Grint was in a movie that I reviewed on the show not long ago, Knock at the Cabin. Which stars Dave Bautista, but again, that was probably the first thing I'd seen him in for a very long time,
And it's about how many times we've watched a movie, and I'm like, oh, I remember them from that and that movie when they were little kids.
Well,
Like,
it's actually quite funny you say that, and I was going to save some of this for the trivia later, but it kind of fits. So, the guy who plays his friend Sam Daly, do you recognize him?
I think I do, but I'm not sure where from.
So he was in the very last Harry Potter movie. He plays Dumbledore's brother.
I would have never have
See, there
guessed.
you go. See, all full of knowledge. But he's not the only connection to Harry Potter, apart from Daniel Radcliffe as well. So, although he's not in this film, the guy who plays Harry Potter's father in the Harry Potter franchise, his name's Adrian Rollins. He actually played the same character that Daniel Radcliffe plays in this movie in the original 1989 version.
All right.
So like there's tons of like really interesting links there that I thought that one particularly for me was quite an interesting one. The fact that he's played the same character again, he's played the same character as a former on-screen father. Then you've got, Dumbledore's brother in there. So there's like tons of connections to the franchise there as well. I mean, the thing we've got to remember as well is like at this point, just after the last Harry Potter movie, I mean, these movies were hugely successful and had huge sums of money, and it's possibly, what will go down, regardless of how people might feel nowadays about, J.K. Rowling and all the controversy that surrounds her, the Harry Potter franchise is certainly still going to go down as one of the most successful franchises in cinema history, and it's always going to be the case. And it's got, spawned side sequels of movies with the Fantastic Beasts series, and as well as, merchandise sales and all sorts.
It's still gonna
It
make money.
yeah, it's going to make tons of money. So I think
100 years from now.
a hundred oh, that you heard it here first. 100 years from now, people will still be watching Harry Potter. But let's talk about some of the aspects of the actual film, because I think one of the things that sort of always strikes me about these kinds of movies, because this is very much a supernatural movie, and I've gone on record and saying that in terms of like sub-genres of horror, am I boring you?
Always.
In terms of sub thanks, in terms of like sub-genres of horror, supernatural, this kind of supernatural horror tends to not be my favorite subgenre of horror.
I
Often,
mean, you are a big fan of slashers,
well,
so.
yeah, but often I find them sometimes just to be a bit cheap. I find they like they don't really earn the scares that they try to give us. I just generally find them to be like a little bit less than. That's not to say that there's still not great supernatural horror movies out there and still not great supernatural horror movies that I love. It just I think I just potentially critique them a little bit harder than I would say a slasher movie or a home invasion movie or any other such subgenre. You though, you're quite a big, like, I'm trying to think back to all the films we sort of watched together and what you like and what you don't like. I think you're quite a big fan of a supernatural movie. You like a ghost story, don't you?
I would say so. I mean, I'm kind of like, I like some of the like slashers, and
Well,
because
it's weird.
obviously I like Terrifier
Well, I was
and
just sort of bringing that
things like
up.
that.
I
So
think like you get a bit grossed out at like the really bad stuff, right? But I think you're actually quite a big fan, and I don't even know if you realize that. I think you're a big fan of like ultra gore.
probably.
Which, especially, maybe it's, the first Terrifier is gory enough, but you also really like Terrifier 2, and some of the other things that we've watched. We watched The Collector and The Collection the other week, and they're super gory movies, and you were a big fan of those as well, and I think.
I wouldn't say like a big fan, but I like the movie,
Yeah, so like I think and the reason like those movies, especially with like The Collector, really appeals to me is because it's got that sort of like puzzly trap aspect, which everyone knows that I really like. But it's also a home invasion movie, and home invasions I think are possibly like the most scariest subgenre that is left, because for me it's like the one subgenre that probably could happen. You
Yeah.
know, the
I feel like for you like more the things that scare you kind of the most,
I
like
think
more possible things
I think
than
for I
like.
think for me, a horror film is more effective when I believe it could actually happen.
Yeah.
So
Well,
that and that,
that's what I was kind of
yeah,
meaning to try and
and
say.
that's where. So I think for me, like the scariest, and again, not to say I don't love the sci-fi and the fantastical and the supernatural, but I think for the fact that I know for a fact that this isn't going to happen, this can't happen, it does take away that scare factor. I'm never ever going to find a supernatural film as scary as potentially like a slash, even some slashers, because some slashers could like theoretically happen. It's like the first Halloween movie. The first Halloween movie is so scary because it's just a guy in a mask, right? And he's not killing anyone for any reason. We don't know about the brother sister link. We don't know about anything else. It's just a guy in a mask going around killing people, and that's it. That's scary. Whereas there's other people out there who need that ton of backstory and who need all the supernatural elements. Having said that, I actually think the supernatural elements in this movie are handled pretty solidly. I feel like overall for this movie, for me, this is a case of, I actually think this is a good movie, but it's not a great movie.
I would say it's kind of good maybe to introduce people into like a bit
Well, that yeah,
of kind of
it's a
horror,
good
because
point. Sorry.
it's not really like bloody or anything, because there's like literally no blood at all.
Nope, none.
And it's kind of like for you to find out what you like or what you don't like,
Yeah, no,
if
this
you don't
is
have like
no, you're
the.
right. This is absolutely, I think, a very good introduction to horror movie. It says here that it's got a 15 rating here in the UK. I'm not sure it had that when it was first released. I think it's maybe got a 15 rating now, but I'm pretty confident when it was first released that it was released with a 12A. So, this is definitely a very much an introduction to horror style movie, which is absolutely fine. You absolutely need a whole pile of these sort of introduction to horror style movies in every subgenre, because that's especially for new fans, and
Yeah.
you're a relatively new
Because I
fan.
remember I was younger and I was trying to watch, like, get into horror movies and stuff. I couldn't watch a lot of them because I had to, like, watch something, like a cartoon or something funny afterwards to, like.
Because you're a little pussy.
I was still a child, thank you
You're
very
still a
much.
child, okay. But yeah, like, these introductions to horror movies are absolutely needed in every subgenre. And I think this is a very good introduction. I think this has got some decent jump scares. I think it's got some good creepy moments. It relies very much on atmosphere of the house. I think Daniel Radcliffe's performance is actually pretty solid. Again, I think the thing for me is everything about this movie to me is pretty solid. There's nothing remarkable about this movie. Like, there's no scene for me that's like, I don't want to go, like, you think of like, and I know we're taking it to extremes because they're different subgenres, but just to like think of Saw, right? Like, everyone remembers him, the guy cutting his foot off in Saw, right? You think of I don't know, you think of A Nightmare on Elm Street. Everyone remembers Glenn getting pulled into the waterbed and blood, you know, shooting out the room, or or Tina's death scene where she's like getting attacked on the roof, and various other, you know, horror movies and the best horror movies. You know, you think of like, try to think of ones we did recently. You know, if you think of things like Jaws, everyone remembers, you know, oh, we're gonna need a bigger boat, and you know, the shark attacking the boat at the end, and all these sorts of things. There's no scene like that in this movie, and I think it probably could have benefited with like one really big set piece. I think it would probably be remembered a lot more fondly than it is if we'd had that one sort of moment that really hooked people and really went, you know, if someone said The Woman in Black, there's a scene that immediately comes to your mind. I don't think this movie quite has that hook, and I think that's...
Well, for me, if you start talking about Women in Black, the first scene, like, I remember, is like three little girls jumping out of the window.
Well, yeah, that's the
openings. That's like the first thing I remember. Then, like, all the children drying after he sees the women.
Well, yeah, that's you're talking about the opening scene there, aren't you? So, we literally start off with, they're just flashed up on the screen there, with the three little girls who, you know, jump out the window. And to be fair, as an opening sort of scene goes, it is quite a striking image. Like to watch three young children committing suicide is quite a striking thing. Especially, you know, if you're going into this with this movie being the age rating that we think it is, you know, that's quite shocking.
Yeah.
You know, for something that's that accessible. So, you know, you're possibly right. Maybe I'm not given sort of that opening scene enough credit. Maybe it's still maybe just like a little bit too fresh in my mind for me to really be like,
I think
like,
that's the thing, because
you know,
if you've seen it only like once or twice now,
yeah, possibly
it's just gonna,
no, you're possibly, you could be right. I think one thing what it does do with that opening scene is you have this sort of, there's this sort of tense feeling that rides throughout the movie, and you'll know this now, you've seen quite a few horror movies now, and you've reviewed quite a few on here in the podcast as well. But usually on horror movies, you'll have like peaks and troughs. You'll have like big moments of tension, big scenes of tension that'll last, you know, maybe for a few seconds. It might last for 5 or 10 minutes. But in general, you'll then be followed up with, you know, a brief spell of relief. You know, oh, it's daylight, so nothing's going to happen in the daylight. Especially with things like slasher movies, you know, that's a common theme. Or, you know, just after a kill, you know, you'll maybe get a period of relief. But with this movie, there's something just sort of always seems to be simmering away. Even when, like, he's back at the village and, you know, he's technically safe from the house, there's always this sort of feeling of tension. And I think it's because, you know, obviously you've got all the villagers who are really suspicious of him. They don't want him nosing about because they're all very fearful that they're all going to lose their kids.
Yeah. That's the thing, like, at first it's kind of like, he doesn't understand, like, what's really going on because nobody really tells him. And, like, all the villagers are just trying to, like, get rid of him, just trying to, like, oh, get away, like, go away. We don't want you here.
Yeah.
And he's just like not really understanding what's going on until, is it Sam
yeah. Bailey, yeah, his friend, yeah,
until he like befriends him and like, and well, sees like his wife's reaction to what he's doing. And yeah
so like, obviously, I mean Sam's really, he's the only one, isn't he, in this film that actually shows Arthur, Daniel Radcliffe's character, any sort of welcome,
yeah,
like friendship. Everyone else is very much get away. There is actually there's quite a lot of relatively famous British actors in this movie as well. You maybe don't recognize
probably
them.
Probably not.
One of the guys, I think his name's Sean Dooley, who plays one of the fathers in the village, has been in a previous movie that we've reviewed on this show as well, Eden Lake, which we watched Eden Lake together, didn't we?
Don't think so.
No? Okay, never mind. But, so, yeah, and he's been in a whole host of other things as well. So, you know, there's a lot of, like, recognisable faces. I think, yeah, you're right. Like, he literally only has one person to really sort of do anything with because of the reaction to everyone in the village. But even then, you know, when he goes for food at their house, he goes for dinner, doesn't he? And his wife Elizabeth is very distressed when they start talking about children. She gets possessed. I want to say gets possessed. I think she gets possessed like what, twice in this movie, or they put it down to her being ill, and they put it down to her being mentally ill, which would make sense with the time period that this is supposed to be set in. But are we supposed to believe that she's possessed? I'm not sure.
I think maybe not the first time, but when they're by the grave, she's definitely possessed.
Yeah,
it seems like it's kind of like starts with like an attack, and then when she's the most vulnerable,
yeah,
it kind of like gets worse and like possessed. Or maybe she's just like kind of possessed, and like the attack like makes it.
I want to. There's a question I want to ask you though, like, because there's a lot of dead children, right, in this village. If you were living in this village, and I know this is like a really fucking not PC thing to say, right, if you're living in this village, and at what point do you just move away?
But look at the time, it's all set. So I was
just get the old horse and cottage, right?
I was looking at what time it was set. So it was set between 1901 and 1910.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously people didn't have like that much of, like, options or...
Well, I mean, yeah, Sam's the only...
It was progressing, but at the same time, it's like...
Sam's the only one with a car, but they've got, like, trains and, like, whatever else, like, and taxis and things like that. So we're not sitting here saying that they can't possibly move around, like, other villages in the countries. I'm not buying that for a second. Boomer in the chat says, this is one of those really competently made, enjoyable horror films. It's just not that memorable. I've seen it twice. And other than saying Daniel Radcliffe put in a good performance, there's not much else to remember about it. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm getting old. Well, that's essentially what I was saying earlier as well, though. Like, yeah. I think I was pretty much saying what you were saying there, Boomer, that this is really competently made, but there's not that hook. That's what I was saying at. One thing I will say, because I'm not going to sit there and say this, like, I did enjoy this film, I'm going to say that, and I feel more positive about it than I expected. I did kind of go into this with relatively low expectations, which is usually the best way to go into films, although I went into Five Nights at Freddy's with incredibly low expectations and still managed to come out disappointed, so, you know, it doesn't always work. But one thing I will say about this film, it hits all the horror cliches, you know. It's you know, you've got the suspicious villagers who are like warding him away. They're like the harbingers, you know, like in horror movies when like they're on road trips and they stop at the gas station and there's always this like really one creepy guy at the gas station.
Wasn't here, the creepy one.
Who?
You know, you said there's all the...
No, but I'm saying...
He was
like,
a creepy one.
No, I'm saying that's what all the suspicious villagers are. They're, like, warning him to, like, leave this town, leave this village. You're not welcome round here, kind of thing. You know, and they're all sort of scared of outsiders, and they're all this really superstitious, and then you've got all the cliches with... You know, they really relied on, like, a lot of background shots, I noticed. So you get a lot of close-ups of Daniel Radcliffe's face, and you can see things going on behind him. They really relied heavily on that, and, you know, there's a few jump scares in there. So I did think, like... I feel like it's been a bit rude about the film, because I do like the film, and I would recommend this film, as you were saying earlier, as that sort of introduction to supernatural horror, but it is very paint by numbers. You get what I mean?
No.
So it's very, it like holds your hand through the film and just like, right, okay, so this is what we do in a horror film, right? We do this jump scare and then we do this one and then we have these people here and we have these scary villagers, and like it's very paint by numbers in that way. Okay. You're disagreeing with me hard, aren't you?
Possibly.
You said you weren't going to argue with me like me and Nico argued earlier on.
Well, I don't know what needs to happen for us to argue like that about a movie, but, you know.
Boomer says, alternate title, Attack of the Genetics. I don't know.
Ow.
Does that hurt you, that one, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I think one of the other things for me as well, I'm on my negative points right now.
I see.
Is there isn't a lot, like, One thing we always say on the show is less is more, especially when it comes to viewing a villain or a monster or whatever. And for me, when we're supposed to be getting glimpses of the woman in black, whether that's behind him in the corridor, whether that's when he's outside and he's looking at the window and she's there, or just like the flashes we get, they show us a lot. Like there's a real lack of subtlety about them. Like it's very much you are getting a full like shot of the monster. You're getting a full shot of the woman in black. There's no and nine a lot of times I think with these types of horror movies, what's most effective is quick flashes, and you go, oh, what was that? Did you see that? Did you catch that? Oh, did you see that in the corner? Like, oh, did you see that move? Whereas with this film, it's very much, hi, like here I am the monster. Look at my face. I'm at the window, and then you'll get like the sharp sort of crescendo of noise when it like moves. I remember one earlier when he's outside, he's looking up at the window. The woman in black is in the window. We can see her for like a solid couple of seconds, and then the music goes done, and it's like I already knew she was fucking there. Like, you know what I mean? So I think they relied a bit too heavily on that. I think that took quite a bit of the scare factor away as well for this film, especially if for I think younger viewers, I think that potentially takes a little bit away from the scare factor. A movie like this isn't going to scare me. That's not, I'm not trying to be like big or tough about it. Like it's just not like this isn't the kind of film that's going to scare me. But to new horror viewers and to younger horror viewers, this definitely has the potential to do that. But I think it could have done that a lot more effectively. I don't know. How do you feel about like the overall sort of scare factor of the film? How do you think about, the sort of screen time that our villains got? Like, what are you thinking just now?
For me, I don't think it was like too much or anything. However, I had like moments where I was thinking, "Oh no, don't do this," or it was closer to the end when his son was on the train tracks. So I was like, kind of, "Oh no, it's gonna end bad."
Well, that's the thing. Like, I want to
Yeah.
talk about the ending, right? Because I think it's generally accepted that this is a bad ending to this film, right? Because they die. But I disagree. I think this is actually a happy ending to this movie. And I actually don't think this is the woman in black being a horrible demon to them. Because she wanted to be reunited with her child. Like, that's the whole point, isn't it? Like, and they think that reuniting her with her child is what's going to calm the spirit, right? And stop all of this stuff from happening. And that's exactly what they do. And to thank him, he re she re sorry, to thank the woman in black, she reunites them with his wife.
Because
I don't know, do you view it as a happy ending or a sad ending?
now that you've mentioned it, it kind of does make sense because you can see that he still gets like flashbacks, like at the start of the movie, he still gets flashbacks of like his wife being in labor and like losing his wife, and even his son had drew a picture of them, like of their family, and the father was the only one in the picture that wasn't smiling. So even the son has like noticed that he seems kind of depressed and like misses like his wife. And at the end, when they're all reunited, he seems like happy and
I mean, I don't know if happy is the word I'd use to describe it.
bummed.
He didn't seem bummed.
Exactly.
I think I want a quick question, like not slightly off topic, but the woman that's with his child, right, at the beginning and then at the end on the train tracks, is that like the nanny, or is he like in a relationship with her? Like, who is
See, yeah,
she?
that is a bit confusing because when the son was like showing out a picture that he drew, he said, "Oh, that's mommy, that's me, that's you," and in a cloud he drew
Yeah,
his like actual
the
mom. So
angel.
he said two mommies, and
So I'm going
it's
to.
kind of confusing because
Because the thing that.
Arthur treats her kind of like
He's kind of a bit
like a maid
He's
slash
a bit distant
like
from her, isn't he? Because. And we could possibly put that down to the fact that he's still grieving over the death of his
Also, you
wife.
can like see in the opening scenes that he has like passed over due like stuff in his suitcase.
Yeah. So I think for me as well, like, what's really sort of telling as well in that final scene when he gets reunited with her and his son, that he's obviously really happy to see his son, but he literally just turns to her and is like, "Oh, go get the tickets." Like, he doesn't even like give her a hug or anything. So that's what maybe leads it to me to believe that she's not, like, they're not together. That she's maybe some sort of like help or some sort of maid or nanny or whatever you want to call it, rather than being like actually in a relationship. Boomer says he's happier with his wife in the ghost world rather than having to clean that huge house all the time. That's fair. I hate cleaning, so I'd rather be deed as well. And with all the jump scares we always get in these movies, I've learned spirits are just bored and massive practical jokers. Could you imagine that at the end of the film they were just like, "Oh, I'm gonna kill you," and then they're like, "Ha ha, April Fools."
No, that would be funny.
Would it?
No,
I don't think so. Okay, so at what point for you, like, so you're Daniel Radcliffe's character, right? You're Arthur in this movie. Now, bear in mind that you've got to find the will, otherwise you lose your job and potentially your home and your livelihood, right? That's the whole point of him doing this. At what point, though, when you arrive at this village, when you arrive at this manor, do you just nope out of there? What's the moment where you're just like, that's it, I'm done, I'm going home?
To be fair, he had Sam to like kind of push him, like, even like he even gave him his dog to keep company or whatever.
Spider. Dog's called Spider.
That's not creepy at all.
Oh, the spider wasn't creepy. Would you rather have the two twins?
Hell no.
No.
Although, sometimes the smaller dogs are more scary than bigger ones.
They're more vicious, I know that.
Exactly.
So yeah, anyway, you've still not answered my question. At what point are you just like, that's enough for me?
I'd probably would have been out of there sooner.
I mean, I think you'd have lasted about 4 minutes.
That's not fair.
Yeah, but it might not be fair, but probably true.
It's not.
Okay. Just trying to be hard on the podcast. Okay. I mean, I don't have a huge amount of notes for this movie because, like I say, I do think it is pretty generic. Obviously, I'll let you say any notes that you have in a minute that we haven't already discussed. I think one of the positives for this film for me, though, is it doesn't really waste any time. I think it's got a pretty standard runtime, but, you know, we get that opening scene with the girls. He arrives at the village. There's some eeriness in the village. He goes up to the house, and the shit hits the fan, like, straight away. Like, he's seeing spirits. He's seeing the women in black. He's seeing the kids. All of this is happening, like, straight away. And I like that. I like that factor. Like, it would have been really easy for this movie to really sort of drag its arse for like 45 minutes, which quite often a lot of these supernatural films do. And for me, that's one of the reasons probably why I am not the biggest fan of this type of film. So I would say that that's one of the biggest positives for this film. And one of the reasons why I would probably recommend this as a movie for people who are new to the genre, is that it really doesn't hang about. It just sort of gets in there.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. It is, though, pretty heavy on the old jump scare factor for me. Probably a little bit too heavy for my liking. I like a good jump scare as much as the next person. There are some films that do it really badly. There are some films that do it really good. I think overall this film did it just fine.
I think they were just trying to make it very, very creepy, because with all the dolls that were in the house, nope.
No, that's where, there you go. See, there you go. That's where you'd have noped. You were asking me when you'd have noped. You'd have just seen the fucking doll, and that would have been you out of there. So I was right.
Wouldn't it be in 4 seconds? Or
wouldn't be 4 seconds.
Said.
That's a 4 minutes.
Boomer
says, this town has an interesting history. That's when I'm done. I can read between the lines. So just don't go to a town that has an interesting history. I think Aberdeen has an interesting history.
Bye.
There's not many places in Scotland that doesn't, to be fair. Most places in Scotland has a pretty interesting history. Is there any notes that you've got that I've not brought up yet? Or anything you want to talk about the film, or have you seen the sequel? No, neither have I. Okay. That's the end of that discussion.
I've only seen like the
I've not heard particularly good things about the sequel. I'm just reading what Boomer said. The Barbie movie must have scared the hell out of you.
I still haven't seen it.
That's why though, because she's terrified of dolls.
No, what it's those like old porcelain dolls that are just like, have you seen them?
I've
Like
seen the film, yeah.
the freaking face painting and stuff. It's just oh.
Okay. I've really not heard good things about the sequel. I think because they've not obviously gone on to make
I've
any
seen
further.
there's like two and three or something
Is
like
there?
that.
Is there more?
I'm pretty sure there is,
Oh,
yeah.
I thought there was just the two of them. Oh well, I guess I'm wrong. But yeah, I've not heard particularly good things about it. Although I'm sure, again, like most things, it's probably something that I will watch eventually when I've got an afternoon where I've got nothing better to do. But yeah, any other points from you?
I just found this thing that I noticed quite funny. You know, like how you have those three monkey emojis
The see no
to
evil, see
like
no evil, speak no evil, hear no evil.
yeah, I
Yeah,
guess.
that's what they are.
Did you notice like the actual like little
Yeah,
monkeys
when
do the same things?
he draws back like the curtain, isn't it? And there's
Yeah.
like the three little see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil monkeys. Yeah, I saw them. There's
Yeah,
the that's.
I thought that was kind of cute, funny.
Cute. Okay. I was wondering what adjective you were going to use there to describe them. You could have literally said anything,
I didn't know until
which
I
is
actually
often
said it.
how we live our lives. I just sort of live my life not knowing what the fuck's going to come out of your mouth. This probably is going to be a slightly shorter episode than normal, just because this is my second recording of the day, and my first recording was incredibly draining. Boomer, you missed me and Nico recording our episode on It's a Wonderful Life. All I can say is it's going to be an interesting listen because it's probably the closest that me and Nico have ever came to actually falling out on an
I think
episode.
so,
But
yeah.
we're still friends. We're still friends. We're still
I
friends.
actually thought you would just end the episode and hang up on him.
I was really tempted to cut the episode short.
'Cause there were moments you were just like, I literally have nothing to say.
Yeah, there was. But
So
anyways, that's obviously for people who are in the chat to go back and listen to when it's released. Is that it for you for notes then? Is there anything else you want to
yes,
talk about
that's me.
that you've done? Right, we're gonna move on and we're gonna talk about some trivia.
I'm sure if we bashed your head in, all sorts of secrets would come tumbling out.
As always, we'll start off with the finances of this movie. So according to IMDb, this movie had a budget of $17 million, which is it's a pretty sizable budget, but it's not like super breaking the bank in terms of movies. It did gross worldwide though, $128.9 million, so massive financial success. Much bigger success than I actually imagined that it would be. But I can certainly see why a sequel was made, and then if you're saying there was a three and a four, probably
I
all
don't know if
made.
there's four, but there's definitely two and three.
Okay, well, they're definitely made on the back of this being a massive financial success. Daniel Radcliffe probably bringing a lot of that in, though. I would imagine, I obviously said at the beginning, there's going to be that group of people who maybe didn't want to see this movie or couldn't sort of get past him being Harry Potter. But you probably also would have had the vice versa as well of people purely going to see this just to see what it was like because Daniel Radcliffe was in it and this is his first film since Harry Potter. And because that's a franchise that does hold just such diehard fans, there probably would have been a lot of people who were just
Okay,
interested
there's
in it.
another one, but I thought I saw somewhere that there was a
Oh,
three.
so after all this, I was right, and there's just two films. Is that what you're saying to me?
Possibly.
So I was right. Okay. This film was so financially successful that it was actually the biggest grossing British horror movie for 20 years. There hadn't been a bigger grossing horror movie than this in 20 years. I think it's been broken since, but like that's massive because British horror has been such a massive staple of the horror genre. When you go back, and I was about to say go back to all your sort of classic Hammer horrors. This is a Hammer horror. This is made by the Hammer Production Studio. Which is one of the most famous. I'm just not sure if you're aware, like about Hammer horror films. That's a bit of a tongue twister. Hammer Horror Films is one of the biggest British horror production companies there is. It's probably one of the most famous horror production companies that is, and is responsible for a huge amount of horror movies released from like the past century. So it's a really big deal. The boy who plays Daniel Radcliffe's son Joseph in this movie is his real godson. So another sort of familial link there. Radcliffe suggested this casting himself. He said it would help him establish an authentic relationship between the on-screen father and son. However, I don't think that was really necessary for this film, because the father and son don't, for me, have anywhere
near... They didn't need that, there's no, that connection, because no, you there, could there, even see that
it's not
it
that.
Wasn't such a big connection.
It was, like, it's not even about the connection. There's just no barely any screen time where they're both together.
As well, like, the only kind of more visible and like father son connection was at the end where they were happy to see each other.
Yeah, but even then, like, it's such a brief scene. Like, it's their embrace is so brief, and then they go back to, he goes back to talk to Sam, and then we get our big sort of final twist. It's all so quick that you really don't need for there to be that sort of connection. You know, like, he's a professional actor, these are all professional actors. Like, I'm more just inclined to think he was getting his godson a job. You know, but here we go. We've talked a lot about the sort of dolls and the toys and things and that in this film. All the music boxes, all the mechanical toys that's in these nursery scenes were not created for the movie. They were all genuine antiques from the period that was loaned to the production company by a collector. So they're all real in someone's collection right now.
Oh God. Unlucky person.
Unlucky? Well, not for him. Boomer in the chat says, if only it was a Dracula film with Christopher Lee and Daniel Radcliffe, now that would have been worth buying on Blu-ray. I don't think you know who Christopher Lee is, do you?
No.
Oh my God. All of our fans are going to just flood us with emails. Christopher Lee is possibly one of the most famous horror actors of all time. Most famous for playing Dracula. But a huge number. He's up there with Vincent Price and Peter Cushing and Boris Karloff and all those people. You have no idea what I'm talking about, do you?
Nope.
This is what happens when you have got like a brand new horror fan who's watched about 10 horror movies in her fucking lifetime.
No.
Okay, 12. But yeah, anyways, so that's that. The sound of the doll laughing. I don't know if you might have picked up on this. The sound of the doll laughing is the exact same sound that Billy the Puppet makes in the Saw movies.
I think
that's a cool little fact, because the Saw movies were, I think the first Saw movie was, I want to say, 2004? Was it 2004? I think the first Saw movie came out, so, you know, it's out for almost a decade at this point. I might be getting that date slightly wrong. So I love the fact that they put that little Easter egg in there. Boomer says he loves new viewers because there's so many new experiences. You've got so much still to experience. I've so much to show you.
Of course.
As I said, the happy ending in which Arthur and his son are reunited with their wife and mother in the afterlife was a last minute addition after test audiences felt that the film ending with them both being killed by a train was just too depressing. So originally they were just killed by the train and that was it. That was the end of the film. There wasn't that scene.
That would have been really depressing. Not gonna lie. That would have been worse.
I don't know. Like, I think I always find it quite interesting when we find, like, oh, people didn't want this horror movie to finish like this because it's too depressing. It's a fucking horror movie. Like, depress it up. Come on. Like, who gives a fuck? Be depressing. Have you seen the...
He was already depressed at the start of the movie.
Well, his troubles are still over. Have you seen Midsommar?
Yeah.
Have you seen how depressing that ending is?
Obviously.
Exactly. Have you seen Hereditary? How depressing that ending is? I'm maybe just going with Ari Aster films, to be honest with you. The last bit of trivia that I have. Arthur Kipps reunites the woman in black with her dead son in the hope of them finally resting in peace. And as I said earlier, in return, the woman in black reunites Kipps' deceased wife with her son and husband. So it was actually the happy ending. She wasn't being evil to them. She was actually paying him back for reuniting her with her son, which is sweet, right?
Sweet and, yeah.
Sweet and murderous. Do you have any pieces of trivia?
I have none.
You have none, okay. It's like being on an episode with Nico again.
Wow.
He never has any fucking trivia.
Well, that's kind of your job.
That's my job, is it? All right, thanks. I'll just do everything else. I'll just do the hosting and the editing and the promotion and the uploading and everything else. And you can just sit there and be like, I've not got anything.
Hey, at least I get you new listeners.
Do you?
I share it.
Uh-huh. Very good. Okay, we'll do our final segment next, and we'll do the ratings and the reviews.
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
So as always, we'll start off with the critic scores. IMDb has this movie at a 6.4 out of 10. Metacritic has it as a 6.2. The Rotten Tomatoes critics have scored it 66% fresh. The Rotten Tomatoes audience scoring at 54%. Again, something that's happening a little bit more often than some of the movies that we've been covering lately is the critics all seem to be, like, in general, and the audience in a relatively close space there. So that's something that doesn't tend to happen very often. Usually when that happens, that means that that's generally where the movie it should be, because everyone's kind of in agreement. As always, the critics' consensus, traditional to a fault, The Woman in Black foregoes gore for chills, although it may not provide enough of them for viewers attuned to more modern high-stakes horror. So it's essentially saying, you know, if you are someone who is a big fan of the genre, I think, and you haven't seen this yet, you're probably not going to get what you want out of this. However, I think if you're new to the genre, you know, this is a good introduction movie, and I think it's still generally just like a fun time. I think it would be a good like background horror movie. You know, if you're like pottering about doing things, you can chuck it on in the background. Boomer says next week he'll be introducing Gabby to Martyrs, and we'll be covering that. I have still to introduce you to Martyrs. I'm not going to say anything, but that's going to be a fun time. I am very much looking forward to that. So Martyrs is a movie, it's a French movie, but it's part of the French movement called French Extremity Horror Films, and it's gory. It's very, very gory, but it has, I've seen Martyrs, introduced, it's one of my favourite foreign films of all time, so I don't need to be reintroduced to it. Anyway, back to The Woman in Black, and as always, we throw it out to our listeners and viewers and asking for your guys' opinions, and we will read a few of them out. So Alaska Girl gives it an 8, had a good creep factor, excellent acting, and had a lot of the old school horror that I've been missing for a long time. Gamer Geek gives it a solid 8, genuinely creepy and some terrifying jumpy moments. Dice Be Rollin, I love that name, gives it a 9 out of 10. I sought it out for Radcliffe. Aside from his fabulous performance, it's a proper classic ghost story with genuinely good scares and tension. One of the few horror movies my brother, who isn't a horror fan, enjoys and requests from time to time. Scare My BFF gives it a 6.5. What Harry Potter is this? Overall, decent film, but I remember it had a lot of hype when it was released and I felt a little let down after I saw it. And again, that's what I was saying earlier. I think I went into this with pretty low expectations, and I think that probably worked to its benefit. And finally, friend and former guest of the show, Ren, gives one of his nice long descriptions, which we always love. I definitely went into this one specifically just to see Radcliffe in his first non-Potter role and wasn't expecting much. It was just the curiosity to see him do something else. I remember being genuinely surprised by it, but not blown away either. I think this was an easy transition from the fantasy world of Potter and its generally younger audience to go into a PG-13 period piece, especially since it was haunting, not gory, and kept Daniel in costumes. Sometimes coming from something as big as Harry Potter, as the titular character, you need to ease into leaving that behind. With all that said, as much as I enjoyed it while watching, it's not very memorable in my opinion. I had to wiki the plot to trigger memories of the film itself, so because of that, I'll give it a 6 out of 10. So I think everyone's kind of generally in agreement. Some people are maybe just like a little bit higher on it, but I think the general consensus is that, you know, this is a good horror film. It's not a great horror film, but it's definitely one that I think we could all recommend, that if you haven't seen it, it's worth checking out. Even if you're like a really big horror fan, and you know, you're maybe not going to be like super super high on it, it's probably worth checking out, just so you can say that you've seen it, you've checked it out, and you can tick it off your list. With that being said, that just leaves me and you. So, Anna, on a scale of 0 to 10, what are you going to rate The Woman in Black?
I will go with 8.5.
An 8.5? Well, that's higher than I thought. I really didn't think you would go that high. Okay, why an 8.5?
Because I quite enjoy it. Like, it's not the ones I use. Like, not the type I usually enjoy, but I like to watch it from time to time.
Okay. So. Well, I mean, like, because that's not, like, I'm just trying to think of, like...
I just feel like the acting was really good for me, and, yeah.
I mean, this is, what, your fourth full episode that you've done for us? So you've done Saw 10, you did Five Nights at Freddy's, and you've done Insidious, right? That's the other three that you've done. So you scored Insidious an 8.
Didn't I do another one?
Did you? I don't think you did. I'm just having a quick look around. No, I think that's you. You maybe did a mini-sode with me, but I don't think you've done a full episode. Anyways, you gave Insidious an 8. You gave Five Nights at Freddy's a 3. You gave Saw 10, which is surprisingly high up the list, an 8.5. So you think it's like on a par with sort of Saw 10, Insidious. Like, Insidious is probably the better one to compare it to. It's another sort of supernatural film. So you've rated this ever so slightly. You've rated this half a point higher than Insidious. Do you think this is a better film than Insidious?
I wouldn't exactly say so, but...
I mean, just because you've rated Insidious lower doesn't necessarily mean it's not a better film. You know, it could be technical reasons why, like, certain things happen that way. Just you know, putting you on the spot.
Well, thanks.
Well, that's kind of the point of the podcast, isn't it? Anyways, that leaves me. Like I say, I think this is a good movie. I don't think this is a great movie. I think it's above...
Did Nico not give his score?
No. I think this is above average without being fantastic, so I'm not going to give it a super high score. I think the acting's fine. There's nothing wrong with any of the effects that's in this movie either. I think they're all fine. I think it on a technical level, it maybe just gets a few things wrong. I think it shows us too much of our monsters. I think it relies maybe ever so slightly too heavily on the jump scares. And ultimately, you know, for me, it's a PG-13 horror movie. There's very, 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 very few of them that I'm going to give a full 10 out of 10. So I'm going to give this a 6, which for me, I think is a relatively generous score. So with that, all of our scores combined with the listeners and the critics' scores gives The Woman in Black an average score of 6.6 out of 10. And it puts it in 55th place of the now 92 movies we've covered on the show. It is one place above Night Watch and one place below Splinter. And I don't think you've seen either of those. So you have 0 point of reference there. It's two places above the Blair
Witch... Have we not watched the Splinter?
We have, but I don't know if you'll remember it. It's two places above the Blair Witch Project, which I know you hate.
Oh, yes, I do.
And it's two places below Hocus Pocus, which I know you've seen.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's your sort of ballpark there. I think that's pretty fair. I don't think it, you know, looking at sort of 5, 6, 7, 8 places further up on the list, that's when you start getting things like House of a Thousand Corpses, like your Event Horizons, Terrifier 2's there, Knock at the Cabin. And I don't think this movie, for as much as I think it's competently made, is better than any of those films. So I think for me, it's probably just about there, around about the right sort of place for me. But of course, if anyone disagrees with us, feel free to pop it in the chat. Feel free to, you know, let us know in our socials. Feel free to email us and tell us how wrong we are. But that's it. That's going to do it. This was our very last horror movie review of 2023. How does it feel to have been on our very last horror movie review of 2023?
Very honored.
You feel honored. You yes. Should feel honored. Fuck Nico. Fuck you, Nico, if you're listening. Yes, this is our very, very last horror movie review of 2023. We do have two more movie reviews still to come out if you're listening to this fresh on the download. But they are both going to be our Christmas movies. So we've already recorded our episode on It's a Wonderful Life. For those of you who weren't here earlier today when we recorded, that's going to get released after this episode, Woman in Black. And then the following week, we'll be reviewing the Christmas movie Dark Angel. And then after that, we will have just one episode left of 2023, which of course will be our end of year horror awards. And then we go into 2024. And because of the way things have panned out, the very first episode of 2024 will be our 100th episode. So we've got some plans coming up for that. I think at the moment we're looking to do like a special movie. But we're also probably going to do a bit of a Q&A and probably some sort of quiz as well for our 100th episode. And then for our 101st episode, it's going to be our re-ranking episode where me and Nico get to re-score 3 movies apiece. And I'll also be updating all of the movies that we've reviewed scores from the critics' sites, because there has been, especially for some of the newer ones, some of those scores have changed. So it might just alter some of the places on the leaderboard ever so slightly. So we will be doing the re-ranking episode on our 101st. And then going into 2024, we really want to put a big focus into January and February, trying and get a lot of content out there. Anna, I'm sure you're going to be making plenty more appearances in 2024.
Of course.
Of course. Nico and myself have got a lot of movies planned. We're hoping to have a lot of our old throwing pens away. We're hoping to have a lot of our guests who have been on previously. So that's Candy, that's yourself, Boomer, that's Ren, that's a whole host of other people as well. All the other family from The House That Screams, all the guys from the Horror Flicks and Guitar Picks podcast, Dawn, and all the people who support this podcast on the regular. You know, we hope to have you all back on again in 2024. But we hope to have a whole host of new guests as well, and hopefully we can get one or two relatively famous faces in there as well. I'm excited for the re-ranking and the awards, although the most awards mostly never go my way. They very much went your way last year, Boomer, because everything was won by Mia Goth and X and Ty West. They won all of our major awards last year. But I can tell you that, you know, the award voting has been taking place. We're well into the middle of the voting, which is taking place across our X page at the minute. We're well through some of the categories. And there's been a few surprises already, I must say. Some movies and some actors and some things making progress when I didn't necessarily think it would make progress. Every year when we do the nominations for the awards, there's always one big front runner. And there is a big front runner this year, but I think it's possibly going to be a close one this year. I think there was a lot of good horror movies that came out this year. There's a lot of stuff that was really highly rated. And I think there was a lot of stuff that was possibly a bit underrated that might do a little bit of a surprise as well. But that's for a couple of episodes time. Like I say, we're going to be doing a couple of Christmas movies. There's definitely not a lot of Christmas cheer between me and Nico in our It's a Wonderful Life episode, but you guys will just have to wait until that drops. If you can't wait until that drops, then go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/podofthedam, signed up from just £1. And you will be able to access, early access, sorry, to all of our video recordings before they go live onto the YouTube. So they'll be getting posted either today or tomorrow there. You're just bitter about Larry Fessenden. Yeah, I think voting is going on for Larry Fessenden. He is currently been nominated in our Best Supporting Performer Award. I've not checked to see how the voting is going, so I'm going to assume with your saying there that the voting is not going particularly well for him. I can't remember who he's up against in his bracket, but he's at least up for an award. You have no idea who we're talking about, do we? You're looking at this as well. Are you going to pick someone for the Horror Hall of Fame this year? Or are you going to not bother?
I could do.
You can do. Do you know enough people in horror to pick someone for the Horror Hall of Fame?
Probably not.
Probably not. But you can tell me who you pick and then I can tell you if that's stupid or not. How about that?
Wow. I might as well not do it.
Alright, okay. Anna, thank you very much for joining me this week.
You're very welcome.
I know, right? Everyone who's hung around here in both recordings today, thank you very, very much. You should title the episode "It's a Shitty Life and Nico's an Asshole." I'm very, very tempted to. I'm very tempted to. But yes, everyone who's hung around for this recording here and for our earlier one today, thank you very, very much. We will be back next week with our recording on Dark Angel, and then I will be recording the awards episode in between Christmas and New Year. I'll be back. I'm going to do a little bit of gaming streaming tomorrow, something that I've not done for quite a while. But you've got work early tomorrow, so I've got some free time on my hands tomorrow afternoon. So I'm going to be back tomorrow. I'll probably try and see if I can get Lies of P finished, which I've not done for a while. But we can go through a couple other games as well. But thank you once again to everyone for dropping in. If you're listening to this on the download, thank you very, very much, and would like to take part in these live episodes like Boomer has here, like Anna did earlier in our It's a Wonderful Life, and like a number of other people's choose to do, then you can do. That's twitch.tv/podofthedamned. But until next week on the Pod of the Damned, just remember, you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. We'll be right back.